Welcome. I am Shelley Robinson, and I am your moderator today of this amazing panel. I'll just let everybody briefly introduce themselves and their area of expertise. Do you want to start, Stephanie?
Sure. Good morning, everyone. My name is Stephanie Versin. I am the founder of LSG Consulting. My specialty, I would say, would be centralization, leasing, optimization of marketing, and offshoring.
Awesome. How about Yoni and Nima?
Hi, my name is Yoni Shraga. I'm the CEO of Team Up Talent. We are an outsourcing company helping multifamily companies hire offshore employees to help with, you know, centralization and just delegating and a lot of tasks to their team.
Hi, everyone. My name is Nima. I'm the CEO of Team Up. We do the same thing as Yoni explained. So we are an amazing team and helping people with offshoring from the Philippines.
All right. My background, I'm Guillermo Salazar, the CEO at IRCX. We're AI maintenance software, remote maintenance software. My background is like 25 years in centralizing field ops for industry and other organizations. And you know, a lot of it had to do with offshoring and remote, and a lot of it was only possible with technology. So thrilled to have this conversation today.
Me too. I was actually, when we all started talking about having this discussion, this is a great way to set the stage. We're going to tackle one of the biggest challenges in multifamily, scaling to a 24/7 service model, which residents are demanding more than ever. How are we going to deliver exceptional service while managing costs in a changing technological landscape? So that is the panel and the discussion theme for today. To kind of kick it off, let's go into that current landscape a little bit, and I'll ask my first question. What are the biggest workforce challenges you're seeing in multifamily operations? What do you think they're facing today? And does anyone kind of want to kick that off?
Sure, I'll start. I think we've seen very much a lot of turnover in the past couple of years since COVID, really. We've also seen many difficulties to recruit, and the length of recruitment. It takes a while to find your people. It takes a while to keep them. So this is, to me, there's always a staffing issue. Anywhere, everything on site, there's a staffing issue, regardless of the size, the asset category, the location. And there's also a cost issue because nowadays we have to pay our on-site people more and more as it's requested with inflation, with a lot of things. And the return on investment is harder and harder to prove to your owners, to your investors.
So really good feedback. Guillermo, did you have something to add?
I would agree. I mean, I'll put it this way, never waste a good crisis. We're in a situation right now where we're really bumped out of our equilibrium with respect to rents. I mean, if you just take the P&L and look at that, rents have come down or they're compressed. You can't raise them anymore. Insurance and taxes have gone up.
Yeah.
In the middle, you've got operations, which needs to run leaner. And even if you could, you probably couldn't hire all the people for those roles anyways. So you've got a hollowing out of the middle, and then all of this whole infrastructure is supposed to serve a resident who has been trained for instant responses by Amazon, Apple, et cetera. And this whole thing doesn't work anymore. Yeah. And so people are voting with their voices on Yelp and Google. They're voting with their dollars and walking across the street. You've got 500,000 units coming online this year. So if you're in a B property, there's probably a good chance there's an A property across the street that's given away 2 months free rent. And that's very desirable for someone who's lost probably 30% of their earning potential due to inflation. So there's very reasonable and rational consequences to a very inefficient system.
And there's an additional cost, Shelley, that I wanted to add, which is the moral cost of open positions in a team.
Yeah.
Because as we know, there's always an open position, unfortunately. And then we know that the only person on site is going to have to do a double work double shift, double everything. And that has also a cost on motivation and retention at the end of the day of that person that is here to work. So that's also Absolutely. Something that we don't measure in our NOI, but it's definitely measurable in the leasing service delivered on site.
Oh, no, that is so well said. And it is, it's the perfect storm of opportunity, the perfect, like Guillermo said, the perfect crisis, and also the perfect moment for kind of a combination of technology and global talent to kind of merge together and provide real solutions.
Absolutely.
Yoni, did you want to add something?
I actually did. Thank you. Thanks for picking up on that. I wanted to add on Stephanie's point. I think one thing that we don't always factor in, we just look at the bottom line, which is very important, but we don't factor in our current team and how we can make them happier and more efficient, which ultimately will also lead to a higher bottom line. Because what's happening now is we're seeing properties where you have a leasing person who's responsible for handling all calls. They're responsible for all the tours. They're responsible for all the follow-ups. And yes, many companies are using AI efficiently, and that's amazing, but there's still a lot of room for follow-up and taking some of the things off the leasing coordinator's plate. For example, this is just one example where that person is right now doing two people's jobs. Maybe they can have somebody helping with, you know, calls and follow-ups. So now your US-based staff can go focus, meeting people, leasing it out. And I think a lot of people are overworked. And sometimes just, you know, amplifying their skills, you don't necessarily need to hire another, you know, full-time US person and have to go through the whole recruiting process. Sometimes they just need a little bit of help, whether that's automation through AI or, you know, a part-time person overseas or a full-time. I think amplifying your current team will not only lead to a happier team, but ultimately in the long run will also, you know, increase NOI as well. So I think it's just a win-win-win for everybody.
That's really good feedback. And Nima, this kind of goes into my next question is, what level of service do today's residents expect? How has this evolved even in the way, you know, that you're recruiting? And we can kind of start the conversation there and all of us talk.
Absolutely. One of the things that I do see and we hear a lot from our clients is having a limited candidate pools and having experts to being able to having lack of experiences and being able to place an expert for that particular job locally, adding to their teams. With us being more on a site with our candidate pools, being able to amplify the teams that they currently have, we're able to place people a lot faster. There is no limitation in our candidate pools. We normally, we're able to at least give 3-4 candidates within the time of frame of 2 weeks. And they do have enough experience with it. Like we normally do about 3 to 5 years, depending on the job role that they're looking for, which I think it's one of the challenge. Like, I mean, that's a basic recruitment, I'd say recruitment 101. There's not even candidates, qualified candidates to begin with. So with our system, with vetting systems that we currently have, we make sure we fulfill this gap.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things, just to add to what Nima is saying, is we're looking for people who are very tenant facing. So like you said, people have expectations, residents have expectations to, at the very least, get heard quickly. They don't want their, concerns. But at the end of the day, tenants are like customers, right? So sometimes just hearing them out saying, hey, we know what's going on. And I think that's what, Guillermo really, really addresses better than anybody, with Iris, is there's an issue. We're going to do our best to fix it now. But if we don't, we're going to know, how important it is, when we need to get to it. You're going to know what's going on. If, it's a broken light and it could wait a day, you're at least going to know somebody's coming Saturday. So I think to add to Nima's point, a lot of people are understaffed. And when you use the right tools, again, whether it's via automation or additional staff, I think the communication part of it is something that the tenants expect, first and foremost.
So I'm hearing residents expect service 24/7 and finding ways to fulfill that across teams. We've got shortages. And then what else are residents expecting? Kind of comes to mind to me as like that multi-generational service, the way I want it, when I want it. is what kind of comes. Well,
omnichannel, I mean, we're used to an omnichannel experience.
Yeah.
It's pretty, you can't, we're, can, if you think of rental as a, it's a consumable,
yeah, right?
And put it in the category of consumption. Like, if, it doesn't matter, pick your product. There's five or six different channels. There's 24 hours of engagement that's available. It's remarkable that it hasn't hit this. Maybe this is what the crisis is going to bring, right? And this is what's dragging the multifamily industry kicking and screaming into this world, because the residents have a voice. Like, they didn't have a voice for like 4 years.
Mm-hmm. And it's one of the latest industry that has not really jumped into looking at customer services as much as we should have, to be honest. So now it's very important. It's almost like a desperate move, which is we need to bring automation. We need to help our people on site. And we also need to be a little bit smarter how we organize the task. You know, role specialization is, again, not a dirty word. A lot of industries before this one did it like decades ago. Mm-hmm. And I think we're seeing it happening, and I think it's going faster and faster in terms of adoption and migration towards that model.
Well, the exciting part about role specialization, what Yoni said earlier, is that if you're doing everything, you're not good at anything. And so you cannot get paid more. And so one of the things that we were talking about weeks back at a conference is that, and this is specifically maintenance, but applies to everything, is that if you don't specialize and become more productive, there's not any more money to pay you. There's just no more money.
Yeah.
So since there's no more resources, no one's taking more than their fair share in this P&L right now. No. And so if you do not choose to automate or become resourceful with offshoring or just optimize the job, the task, it's like thinking about the jobs we done framework by Clayton Christensen. Like, look at what needs to be done and who needs to do it and break it apart, unbundle it. Because if we're going to try and do that one leasing agent that Yoni's talking about, that person's going to have a miserable existence and a tough day to day and still not be able to hit target.
No.
And on top of that, this person will become a liability in terms of customer services, because they are not good on the phone. They might be good on the floor, but they are not good at administrative tasks. And it's the productivity is going to suffer. And nowadays, we need people to be very productive. But for being very productive, you need to be a specialist. And that comes from, you know, Ford created the role specialization in the 30s with his car. And that's what we're doing here the same way. Like, you should be a specialist in lease management. You should be a specialist on the phone. Not everybody is comfortable with everything. That's not true. And we're proving it every day with bad secret shops.
It's true. It's very true. Well, let's move into kind of each of your areas of specialization. So I'm gonna ask kind of Guillermo, we'll start with you. How is artificial intelligence transforming maintenance technology and coordination for multifamily properties? It kind of fits into that next layer, and because maintenance is service, maintenance is reputation. What are you seeing with regard to that?
I mean, I think it's important to step back and go, what's the problem we're trying to solve? Because AI can spin you around in a whole bunch of different ways and waste a ton of time solving problems that don't need to be solved. If we step back and look at the desire of every single asset, every single physical asset manager, leader, facilities leader, maintenance leader in every industry, they want to get to a no work order scenario or a predictive maintenance scenario. Mm-hmm. To get there, you've got to have good data, right? You cannot be predictive if you don't know the counts of the hours on a filter or the time when it was last changed. So let's go back to the problem at hand. The root cause is the quality of the data. And if we can enhance the quality of the data, that fits the environment. So what's interesting is you take a look at the physical environment that initiates a maintenance request. So my toilet's not working, my AC is not working, my plug's not working, whatever. The resident is least qualified to describe the problem. That's why they're calling in. Mm-hmm. And so consequently, they're going to give a vague response that has to do with the physical environment. So remember, this isn't checking on your bank balance or changing a flight. This is the physical environment. And so we hear things like, my food chopper's not working, my windows are crying, I've got soggy carpet. Like, that's how they come through, right? And so how do you solve that? Or my hair dryer's not working. That's how it comes through. You don't realize that they've got a curling iron, a hair dryer, and a vacuum running in the same GFCI circuit, and it blows the whole thing up, right? And so the physical environment is really critical to provide the kind of data that you need required. And so, like, there's a lot of ways that we can look back at legacy systems like phone, forms, email, that were available for those timeframes. Like, the phone call center started in like the 50s. Mm-hmm. So when we move forward, the technologies available today, we think through how AI can begin to solve the problems of the data quality, the triage, the assessment, and then ultimately start sorting out what job should be done. Because not every service request equals a $200 trip.
No, yeah.
And the problem is, the model is assuming that every service request equals a $200 trip. And so we've got to take those things and just turn them on their side, mm-hmm. and go, no, that's this, that's this, that's this. And when you start tiering problems, we can start using AI to solve problems on the resident side, use AI to improve the data, use AI to schedule the right people, use AI to optimize that experience without lifting a finger. And this is where you start to leverage offshore, is that you begin to accelerate the learning and the lessons of folks at a remote context, because they could be anywhere, yeah. but they're able to solve problems faster. And, oh, by the way, they generally show up with, like Yoni was just saying, sometimes more experience than what's available in the local market.
Yeah.
Because they've been specializing because of the nature of their work. And so you get, you know, I was just on LinkedIn the other day, there's like 450 maintenance coordinators in the Philippines, right? That is available everywhere. So, like, that mind bend, I think, is the quality of the data, the AI to reinforce the quality, to de-risk the decision, and then the catalyst of being able to use resources from anywhere to solve the problem.
It's a mixture of troubleshooting and prevention, even. So that fits back into that reputation with the residents. If it's their GFI, I'll go back to your example, and they had to wait for somebody to come out just to say, oh, let me reset this, they yeah. can get instant help right away from that global resource, troubleshoot it, and get them right back to enjoying their apartment.
And it's tied back to leasing, right, and to marketing.
Yeah.
Your list of maintenance orders. So first of all, everyone who's taught to sell anything is taught to go after problems and pains.
Yeah.
Resolve pain. That list of work orders is your list of pains by your current customers that are paying you today.
Yep.
Not a customer that might want a pizza party, not somebody who might want to use the dog park or the gym or whatever. Like, no more hugs and chugs. Let's get this thing figured out and raise the floor by addressing the pains that your customers are articulating in the internal system. Because if you don't, they're going to go to the external system called Twitter, Yelp, Google reviews, and they're going to tell everybody there.
That fits in perfectly to my next question for Stephanie. You know, you mentioned leasing, Guillermo. So, Stephanie, what does effective leasing centralization look like? And what are the biggest misconceptions about it?
First, centralization cannot happen without technology. So it's really the back end, the backbone of everything is to make sure you have a tech stack that allows automation, allows AI, and allows remote teams to plug into one system. So that's one thing. The other thing I wanted to mention before I jump into centralization and leasing is, offshore teams doesn't mean lower quality yeah. of people and service. So I want to really break that idea, because there, I have experienced a lot of offshore teams. I've hired more than 50 people offshore Philippines, El Salvador, Ecuador, Colombia, and they are more educated than me. Their English is better than me. Their specialization is, as Guillermo said, they've been specialized for a long, long time. So when you hire a leasing assistant or a leasing coordinator, they know exactly what to do and they will adapt very fast and they will learn your new software very fast if they have not had this experience. So I want to make sure, you know, offshore doesn't mean less quality. It's actually sometimes and most of the time much better than what you can find in your local market that is understaffed and nobody is, you know, there's not a lot of applicants. So that's that. Centralized leasing looks in many ways. The first step that is probably the easiest step is the admin leasing that you can centralize. Mm-hmm. So removing from the on-site team, the lead management engagement with a prospect when they call, chat, email, could be done by a remote team that is specialized with your portfolio. It's a question of training. It's a question of accessing the information once again. Mm-hmm. Your leasing coordinators, the coordination of application and lease management and lease execution could be also done completely offshore. You don't have to be on site to do so. What we need on site from a leasing perspective is someone that can tour in person that prospect, that can first follow up after the tour has been scheduled by the offshore team to make sure you qualify that lead as much as possible before the tour so you can personalize that tour. You tour based on what you have gathered in terms of of information from the prospect, and then you do a very personalized follow-up email after the tour, not like 3 days after. You do it the same day if possible, and then you pass on that lead to your specialized offshore team or remote team that will take care of any online application question that the prospect can have and then process the lease. So you really shrink basically the time from lead calling someone to a lease being signed. You really can do it in even a couple of days or even the same day. I've seen it before. So yeah. This is where I think we deployed skills where they need to be deployed, which is on-site team. They are here. They know your asset. They know the neighborhood. They know they live there, so they know best, and they tour in person. But calls, chat, emails from prospect could be handled by an offshore remote team. Application, online application and leasing management could be handled by an offshore team. Your renewals as well could be handled by a remote or offshore team. Could be a specialization as well. Collection is a specialization. Delinquency could be also handled. The first steps anyway could be handled by a centralized offshore team, which leaves your on-site team to breathe a little better, to be more strategic about the tour that they are going to have, to organize themselves, to make sure they have read the guest card before the tour. So to me, it's not like removing jobs from the on-site, it's to make it better for them to do their job better.
Clearing away some of that clutter of the tactical tasks, like you were saying, and provide that high value service. And then Guillermo, are you seeing, if, as far as centralization and maintenance, what roles are you seeing are commonly centralized first from a maintenance perspective? I think you're on mute, sorry.
Sorry, no problem. Ironically, it reflects the journey of leasing. When you consider the first contact is what Stephanie just described, and then the coordination, the administration, the triage is the same thing you're happening in your first two touches in leasing. Yeah, if you just take the mirror image of the leasing centralization experience and put it in maintenance, it's the exact same thing. Yeah, it's only I would say the nuance that comes into the maintenance side of things is that if someone does need to turn a wrench or, you know, unstuck a toilet or something like that, then you can, in many cases, you can coach the resident to do it.
Yeah.
And everyone that tells me that renters expect people to do that stuff is crazy. Renters want to have their toilet working. They don't care who does it.
Yeah.
And they want their AC working. If it's 110 degrees outside, they don't care who put the batteries in. They want to be comfortable. That is what they want. They want to relieve pain. And so the first few pieces of the step of capturing the request, clarifying the request, triaging the request. It's the mirror image of leasing. There's very little difference. And that person needs to be on site. That could be a 1099. It could be W-2, depending on how you set it up. But you've taken so much work out of their daily workload. Like we've seen in some cases, like 3/4 to 2/3 of their workload being relieved by offshoring that maintenance problem. So when everyone says that there's no staff, there's no people, it's because we're asking them to do really inefficient jobs. Like it's a very unproductive, it's a very inefficient process. We're asking people to commit a career to. So that's why, you know, so I would love to kind of like just offset the every leasing experience. It's the exact same thing. And so there's not too much different.
I love that. One more element to forget, which is when the admin is removed from your on-site team, actually the morale of your on-site team skyrocket. Mm-hmm. So there's also something very beneficial about the fact that you are going to have less turnover because people are happier to do what they are really wanting to do and good at.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And then Yoni and Nima, what do you have case studies of kind of the most common positions that are being centralized? Does it echo the sentiment of Stephanie and Guillermo? Are you seeing anything different? And then part two of that question is, what cost challenges and examples of efficiencies are happening when they centralize and move those positions remotely?
Absolutely. I would say our three most common roles, I would split it into four. Assistant property management. So just having an assistant property manager who can, you know, help the regional with rent collection, with leasing, with maintenance. Maybe, you know, some companies don't need a full-time leasing coordinator and some companies don't need. And Stephanie's right. Earlier she mentioned sometimes it's not good to have, you know, wear multiple hats. But in certain situations when it's more basic duties, you can have an assistant property manager kind of, you know, help the on-site leasing team separately and help the maintenance coordination team separately. So an assistant property manager is a very common position. A leasing coordinator is a very common position, maintenance coordinator. And then the other quarter would just be, you know, administrative or bookkeeping, different roles where it really depends on every company's, you know, setup.
Yeah.
And regarding,
I'll throw an interesting data point out to support your data there, Yoni. It 30% of a support team's time is just spent scheduling.
Yes.
Wow. So think about that. Like 2,000 hours a year, right? 600 hours you are paying to schedule.
It's remarkable. I mean, it's really unbelievable if you think about it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, and a lot of companies are automating it, and certain smaller companies maybe don't have the abilities to automate it. So, you know, everyone, a lot of people are being very inefficient. So I think you make a great point. And then regarding the results that we're seeing, again, I would have to say, I don't know too many companies that we've worked with that have replaced an on-site staff with a remote employee. What we're seeing is companies that are growing, instead of necessarily hiring more people in the US where they're having difficulty, they're adding remote members to amplify. So the way we look at it is, I call it an executive assistant that is specialized, like Stephanie was saying, in that role. So yeah. So somebody with 3-4 years of leasing experience will be your on-site leasing person's executive assistant. So what we're seeing is happier teams, and to tie it back into happier residents. We really, really don't realize, you know, people treat their clients at a restaurant paying one time $100 much better than they do their tenants who are paying $3,000-$4,000 a year. And we don't realize, I mean, the cost of that tenant leaving is much more than we really realize, right? Replacing the tenant, who knows how the next tenant's going to be. So I think what we're seeing with more efficient teams are happier teams, happier onshore teams, happier offshore teams, a better culture, and we're seeing much better, you know, resident satisfaction as well.
That's really good. What is the average savings compared to traditional positions that, you know, Guillermo, you were talking earlier about finding the money. So Yoni and Nima, is it 30%? Is it, you know, what is the traditional savings compared to global talent?
It's a lot.
70%.
It's
about, most roles. Yeah, go ahead, Nima.
I was just going to say the same thing, depending on the role that there is. But normally, generally speaking, it's 65 to, we're looking at 70 to 75% savings.
And you can fill the job.
Inexpensive markets on coast, it's probably 50 to 60, but in the middle of the country, it's probably much more indeed.
Yeah. And a lot of times, adding to what Stephanie, and I just wanted to add, one of the biggest questions that we get asked is when you talk about offshore, people are already afraid of the, you know, the working hours. And that's something that I wanted to add into this. You know, it would be the same thing as the US hours. They're all be working with the same working hours in the US, even though they're offshore, doesn't matter where in the world, they're going to be working in the US. That's one of the biggest, frequently question that we get asked, especially Yoni gets on the calls. It's like, are they going to be working US hours? Absolutely. They're going to be working from, depending on, you know, what hours you want them. And also what Stephanie mentioned, their English is better than probably mine. You know, I mean, they're parts of, you know, they're parts of different worlds and different cities. We're specialized in the Philippines, where we find a lot of people in Cebu, you know, they're having American accents, you know, depending on what you're looking for, you know, they're quality people who can fulfill the same gaps that you're looking for.
And then it goes into that 24/7 service model. Like they, you could actually have people on three shifts in the Philippines servicing your residents, as, you know, you think about the chatbot rollover that rolls over to real human requests and you need somebody there 24/7. Like I can think of that use case alone, of having that flexibility of an hourless, it's like Vegas, it's open all the time.
Forget there's four time zones in the US, right?
Yeah.
You've got four hours that you can overlap. So it's not like you're gonna be sitting around waiting for us. Well, there's four time zones in the US, and you've got people working activating all different hours. Like I'm sure leases are closed at 2 a.m. as I'm sure I know that maintenance requests come in at 2 a.m. And so it is a 24, I mean, it's kind of crazy to think that our model, there's like 35,000 hours in a year, and we basically staff 8,000 of them.
Yep. So
like 25.
And weekends.
What's that?
Weekends are a huge opportunity and time for leasing, right? I mean, you want to catch that lead when it's hot. So actually most of our leasing coordinators, their shifts are a lot of times Saturday to Thursday, or sometimes, you know, so it really depends on what you're looking for. But I think it's very important, like Guillermo said, people don't live 8 to 5. They just work 8 to 5. So we need to be there to meet them when they come.
Absolutely.
So let's pivot into a discussion on implementing this. If you're, you know, if our listeners are, they haven't started centralization, of which, you know, I would be curious to know what percentage of property management companies haven't even started to address centralization. I know it's a hot topic. People are thinking about it, but a lot of companies still haven't even started it. So for an operator just beginning to think about their workforce strategies, and we can call it workforce strategies, rehoming, centralization, rethinking work, you know, what's the first step that they should take?
We should call it saving money.
It is saving money, a lot of money.
It does need to be rebranded. Yeah. Growing NOI and increasing asset value.
Yeah.
It's usually, I look at it by process, people, and tech.
Yeah.
Which means that centralization is not going to clean your processes if your processes are muddied. So first you need to clean, you know, you put your duck in a row, which means that what is the process? Where are your SOPs? How is it really working? Because centralization is trash in, trash out. It's not going to help you. You have to clean your house first before thinking of centralization. So it's processes, it's your people. How are you going to work your people to be multi-site when it's on-site teams? So how to process that volume of application per year? So you have to really calculate how fast someone specialized can run an application, can run a lease, and really calculate how many do you really need. Because most of the time, actually, you will be tempted to overstaff your offshore or remote teams because you think they are as fast as your on-site team. They are faster. They will be faster. You just don't know how much faster they are going to be. And then technology, making sure your technology is going to support your centralization. And I said that at the beginning. Without technology, there is no centralization. But for with technology, you need to make sure that your tech speak with each other to not waste your time with three screens and looking at different things to cut and paste. It has to be in one suite from, you know, your first call to discussion, to the chat, to online application, to screening, to signing the lease, and then even moving in, making sure that your tech stack is fluid in terms of the customer journey.
Love it.
Absolutely. And I'd like to add as well, I think sometimes people look at it as like black and white. Either I'm not centralized at all or I'm fully centralized. Sometimes just being 10% more centralized is a step in the right direction. You know, I think,
absolutely.
You know, not too much good came out of COVID, but I think one good thing is that it showed people the ability for remote work. And you have a lot of property management companies. You know, if you're able to have any hybrid work right now with your U.S. employees, you're ready to start offshoring. Yeah. It's the same tech stack. It's the same setup. It's the same management. So sometimes just, you know, giving it a shot, it's not a large commitment. Any form of centralization, whether it's getting an AI agent to help with leasing calls or getting an offshore employee or trying to do your maintenance through Iris, sometimes just giving it a shot or piloting it on one property or one role, is you can see if it works or not. At the end of the day, there's no magic sauce. Nobody's going to come in and if your business is running extremely inefficiently overnight, going to change that. At the end of the day, it comes down to the operator of the business. But there's a lot of tools out there that can make people's lives a lot easier. And centralization through some of the various forms that we spoke about, that's what it'll do. It'll just make your life a lot easier and more efficient.
One thing to add to that is that it's for everyone. It is not for everyone. If you have 15 units, you should be centralizing right now. You should be thinking about offshoring some of that workload, because, and even more so at 15 units. And so I just want to put that out there, is it is for everyone because of the scale and efficiencies that you can achieve. And I would, you know, it can be overthought. Like, I did centralization in industry for like too many years. BPOs, all that stuff. And if you just commit to 160 hours of one person, you will find the work that you do not want to do any longer. And the act of handing it over will force you to fix your muddy process, because otherwise you may not acknowledge your muddy processes until you hand it over, but you will figure it out. So I do, you know, to Stephanie's point, muddy processes can't be wholly centralized, but that doesn't prevent them to start centralizing.
I would like to add to Guillermo's.
And there's one more.
Sorry, go ahead,
Nima.
You go.
No, please go ahead.
Just one more thing, which is, you know, your global team, the offshore team, is the extension of your existing team. So it's very important to remember to manage them as good as you're managing your domestic team, because they are part of the team. And that's where sometimes you see a disconnect with that, because someone is, you know, not managing the offshore team the same way they are managing the domestic team. It's the same team. They are just on a different time zone, really. And I really want to insist on this, because that's the success of your centralization and offshoring, is to treat this global team as an extension of your existing team. I'm done.
Nima?
Yeah, I would like to add, it's an add-on to what Yoni, Stephanie, and Guillermo said. It is for everyone. But truthfully, are they ready to be able to handle a remote worker? You know, are they ready to be, have they hired anyone remotely before? Are they ready to be able to carry on this person? And like Stephanie said, to be able to train it properly. It takes the same time as someone as you were to be training onshore. You got to be able to be ready to be able to train them, to be able to dedicate probably 2 weeks, depending on how long does it take. Doesn't matter what experience they have with the industry, but every company runs differently. They got to be able to get adapted to your company's culture and internal understanding of how the system works. But there are companies, back to what you asked, Shelly, there are companies that we face with that, you know, they're not ready yet to be taken up. That's one of the pre-qualifying questions we asked them. Are you ready? Have you hired anyone remotely before? We got to make sure they are ready. And believe it or not, we've come across with companies at different seminars that Yoni and I have attended. People are still using Excel sheets for their weekly meetings that they've had, you know, instead of using softwares. I personally would I would do more digging to see if they are going to be able to handing off things to someone else, you know, offshore. Those are the things that we don't want to make sure. It is for everyone, like Guillermo said. But they got to be able to catch up with today's fast-paced, you know, like industry, like centralization. They got to be able to wake up and get themselves adapted and then become a team. So that, I just wanted to add it to, you know, what everyone else said.
Great point. And then I saw Steve Wunsch is actually on. And thank you, Steve, for your comments about leasing on the weekends. Always good to see your bright and smiling face in the commentary as well. I'll just say two things before we move to the next section. Bigger organizations, if you don't know where to start, it's always good to take your most innovative property management professionals and ask them to pilot and ask them what they think that they could do differently or better. They'll tell you. So that's one option. And another strategy I've also heard is the turnover strategy, is you'll start to replace with global talent as you have turnover. And Stephanie, I know you brought that up earlier as well. So just some other options and considerations out there if you're starting to think about that in your particular organization. Any success stories that this panel of experts would like to share about a company or an organization in multifamily that has transformed their workforce model or is in the process of transforming it?
We have a client right now that has 1,000 units, and they had a couple assistant property managers from us, but nobody dedicated to leasing, and they added a leasing person under their to be an assistant under their US-based person, and they've already had four new leases signed from old leads that they probably wouldn't have even gone after had they not had this person. So right there, those new leases kind of have paid for this employee and then some. And I think Steve mentioned something about renewals earlier. I think we don't realize that sometimes your client is right there. We're always looking for the new lease and new leads. I don't think people in the multifamily industry put enough emphasis on renewals. You know, if you have a good tenant that's already paying, that's not a headache, that's not causing you issues, forget the vacancy between getting somebody new. Also imagine getting a new tenant that might be a headache. It might be, you know, there are just so many factors that come in. Once you have a relationship with somebody, they're good. If you want to renew them, then you have to give them good service. So I think anecdotally speaking, we're seeing a lot of that when you add global talent. So that's what we're seeing.
And then just make a note, we're going to answer some questions towards the end of the cast here. Before we switch topics, Stephanie, you wanted to add a successful story.
Yes, I have a client about 10,000 units that have completely centralized their leasing administration, really from leasing admin, so inside sales to lead management to application to lease execution to collection, renewals, delinquency, collection, and every KPIs they are measuring between the before and after has improved tremendously. Wow. This is, you know, to me, it's like reducing the time between lead to lease, reducing the amount of collection because there is more rent reminder on time. Renewals is also, instead of being always an afterthought, it's on time being done. So you have more renewals happening. It's striking to me to see it in real with true KPIs on the before and after.
We have one customer that grew by 50%. Their team shrunk by 25%. And their CSAT went from 71 to 79.
Wow.
Wow.
I love it when you can measure it too. That's just
that's the trick as well, is to make sure that you really have annual KPIs to measure everything. Because at the end of the day, otherwise it's just a big number There is improvement and productivity improvement at every step of the leasing, specifically the leasing or the customer journey, the resident.
Awesome. One, before we kind of get into the questions in the chat, what's one prediction that each of you has about the future of multifamily operations in the next 5 years?
Centralization is here to stay. For yeah. sure. There is no return.
No.
Yeah, they'll be, you know, autonomous buildings. Like UDR is doing it already.
They are.
There'll be nobody there. You know, yeah. if you go to a Kasai, yeah, I think it's, there'll be nobody there, and we'll be using, you'll have floaters for maintenance.
Yep. I think centralization is here to stay. I also think 5 years in the multifamily world is 1 year in, you know, the real world. I think multifamily sometimes is slow to adapt. So maybe some of the smaller players, it might take a little bit longer, but we're definitely headed in that direction.
Everything is becoming globalized. So it's, you know, the world is facing that towards that trend anyway. So may as well just go with it.
And we have to remember also that the younger generation coming to becoming a leasing will expect a centralized model. They will expect to have all that admin task already offsite for a long time. So it's also going to be a perk for recruitment to make sure that you have a centralized model already.
Excuse me. I will add to that operationally. Sorry. Centralization and the talent that you have global and stateside is going to demand that your prop tech solutions are very simple and easy to use and intuitive. And those are the prop tech companies that will still be around in 5 years.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Guillermo, am I able to see the questions or are you?
I'm here. I'm Dustin.
Dustin, how do you think suppliers can best position their offerings knowing that the property is already budget constrained? This comes up a lot right now. Positioning, sales enablement, value proposition, and budget constraints. And I've got a couple thoughts. Who wants to kind of chime in?
I usually build a business case, which is, yes, you have to spend here, but here is the product, how much the productivity is going to bring you. So build a business, a very business case with true KPIs on the before and what you think will be the after. And that, I think, to me, talks volume.
I love that. I would add, what I keep hearing from my clients is that they're being demanded for real case studies and real results. And that's part of your sales process, is to speak to what you've really been able to deliver, whether that's services or tech solutions.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure exactly what Dustin does, but for us, I think it's hard. You know, how do we justify, don't let go of somebody in the US, but add a new employee globally? That really is our sales pitch. So how do you justify adding an extra $2,000 a month or whatever it is to the bottom line? What we say is try it. There's no commitment. Try it for a couple of months and see what it does for you. And a lot of times, you know, we work with people who have 5,000, 10,000 units. They'll pilot it for, you know, 500 units, and they'll really start seeing what happens. So it really depends on your product or service and trying to, you know, justify them at least giving it a shot.
Yeah, I think that the seek the pain. So when you're looking to find, here's the great example. Here, I'll give this a free. It's like, go find areas that have a lot of job postings for the thing that you solve. So if you're leasing AI software, go find a region that is hiring a lot of leasing agents. I assure you that everyone in that market is suffering from that problem, because that's the way they used to solve the problem of how to lease a unit. Yeah. Same thing with maintenance tech, same thing with everything. We do is just go find the job postings. That is where the pain is, and go with them. And then once they confirm the evidence of pain, work your way towards the business case as an alternate way of solving the problem.
Love it. Any other questions?
Yeah, we got one right here from Steve.
Steve, How do you get operators to be willing to take the risk? Multifamily is historically risk averse. What tips would you give supplier partners or others trying to sell ideas like centralization and offshoring? Great question.
Yeah, I think on the offshoring side of it, there really isn't much risk. It's just a financial commitment. And then, like I said, most of our, you know, most employees are a couple $1,000s a month. So, you know, for us, we just ask them to give it a shot. Like I mentioned earlier, you know, there really isn't much more of a risk than just trying it.
And as we discussed, you pilot a small slice of your portfolio for 3 months, 6 months, and then you bring back the business case with the numbers, and then you usually go for the rest of the portfolio. So piloting a small amount of assets is the way to go at the beginning.
Something I always like to do too is take the old way and B test it with the new way, and then have your metrics really nailed out of what you're going to compare. Like you were talking earlier in the case study about CSAT, like pick your metrics and talk about what's most important with who you're selling into, and measure that against A and B portfolio or A and B property, depending on how large of the segment you're going to slice the pie into to test it and really measure what matters.
Someone told me this once that nobody wants a stranger in their house, but if that stranger is a fireman and your house is burning, you don't care anymore. And so like trying to find the evidence of that pain will reduce the risk. If it's just an interesting thing, that's covered in risk.
That's so true.
And so if we can just find the evidence of that pain, you will find people who are naturally de-risking themselves because they're seeking other alternatives.
There's not a single customer I talk to that isn't in NOI compression and cost creep. And most of them are in market oversaturation. There's plenty of pain right in that little chunk right there for every supplier partner out there. If you're solving a problem that relates to the bottom line, that takes out a lot of risk.
One more here from Anthony.
That's a really good comment, Anthony Hunt. He's like, you realize 1% of multifamily is professionally managed by the large institutional firms. Yes. The real opportunity is with the small operators. And I think many times small operators get dismissed. I just saw a chart recently where it's a whole pie of all of the management groups. And it's a very small chunk of the top 50.
It would be like 45 million units in the US. Graystar manages 1 million.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're the biggest by three.
Yeah. I think many times too, in speaking to kind of the SMB to small enterprise property management companies, they feel left out, I think, of the conversation as well sometimes. So I think addressing them, like Anthony Hunt is saying, it's you want to make sure you're addressing them, you're acknowledging them, and that you can help them become more efficient. And then he said, that means the obstacle is a function of scaling education to the masses, don't you think? And what do you all think about when he says education? What is that? What do you think that means? Like, does that, like, just the knowledge of centralization and offshoring as education?
I would think so, yes.
Yes.
But for small operators, usually the tech is a hard price tag to swallow. So there is that. If you cannot afford the tech, then centralization is not going to be able to happen.
That is well said. Anything else, Guillermo?
Do they care? And I mean that like really not just being rhetorical, but like often if they've got 15,000 units this year and they plan for 15,000 next year and 15,000 year after that, they might not care. And so the education is to educate them to bring that horse to water, but then force it to drink. It could be a waste of time. So it's those that are seeking to grow or have a scale problem. They're looking to scale or have a scale problem. I've tried to convert the masses, and it's you just can only convert people that are seeking to change.
Love that.
Yeah.
So it's been a really great discussion today.
It was.
I'm so glad everybody wanted to make this happen, and appreciate the opportunity to moderate it with this group of great experts.
Thank you, Shelly.
Thank you, Shelly, for putting this together. Appreciate it very much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening today. And we'll get this out. It's on LinkedIn, so it's out there forever. If you've got any comments, please comment on it, and we'll respond.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.